Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing our program. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show, off and running on Tuesday, the 7th of May, 2024. We're in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studios on 1030 KVOI The Voice. Worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. The Buckmaster Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Today we resume our bi-monthly interview series presented by Pima Community College. This series introduces our listeners to the dedicated educators and supporters of Pima Community College. Joining us on the live line is the newly named athletic director at Pima, Ken Hockamy, who replaces Jim Monaco. Jim officially retired from the post that he had held since 2018. Coach Hockamy has headed the Pima Community College baseball program for the past 6 years. He's been very successful. In fact, in March, reached 200 wins on the diamond for the Aztecs. Congratulations, Ken, on this appointment. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me, and I appreciate you you're saying those nice words about me. Looking forward for another challenge.
Let's talk a little bit about how you got to this position. You're a homegrown guy, right?
Yes, sir. Grew up here, born and raised in Tucson, and went to school here, went to high school here, and then went out on this journey to play college baseball and get my degree, and came home for a short period of time and coached a little bit at some local high schools, and then a couple of years at the U of A, and then left again for 20 years and started a new journey coaching college baseball, and then came home. So that's kind of where we're at presently.
Where is this love of baseball coming from? Did you play baseball as a kid?
I did. I grew up in a family. My grandfather was a great baseball player here in Tucson High, and played some professional baseball, and then my dad and uncle followed him and did kind of the same thing, and so it was in my house as a youngster, and my brother and I just grew up playing baseball and fell in love with the game and somehow made it a career for myself.
The Hockamy name is a revered name in town. I mean, you've got so much history there. Tell us a little bit about, you know, people remember the Hockamy department store. Was this part of your family, Ken?
Yes, it was. And the department store was the first real department store in Southern Arizona. So it was very popular amongst the people that lived in this area. My great-great-grandfather that came up and from Sonora and started the store, and all of his kids, you know, worked there at the store, and then that's kind of how the Hockamy family got its start in Tucson, and then we all kind of branched out from there. So I am part of that family. And so it was a great place. Obviously, I was a young boy when they shut the store down, but I run into so many people throughout Tucson and Southern Arizona who remember the store and tell me stories about them going there. And so it's really nice and really neat to listen to those stories and hear what they, you know, how much they enjoyed it.
Ken, let's talk about the footprint of Pima Community College Athletics. How many student athletes do you have? How many sports are in the portfolios, please?
Well, right now we have over 300 student athletes. We have track, cross country, men and women's track, men and women's cross country, men and women basketball, baseball, softball, volleyball, and men and women soccer. So, and right now we have golf, men's and women's golf, but we're going to see where that takes us next year. But yeah, it's a great department, lots of kids. lots of student athletes who have had a lot of success in the classroom and on the field. We're proud of where we're at right now.
This whole thing, you know, the big boys with the likeness thing, where the basically the players are getting paid in effect. Does that affect community at the community college level, Ken?
You know, it kind of depends on where you're at, because those rules apply to junior college athletes as well. So, mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it kind of depends on where you're at. If you're in an area and there's some people that have a lot of money and they have really successful programs and people want to pay their athletes, they can do that. We have not gotten into that. You know, we're old school. We're recruiting student athletes who are really good at what they do, whether it be on the court, on the field, and they're good students in the classroom. And you know, our job is to help them, you know, move on to the next level, whether they're going to continue to play or, you know, just go to school and get their degree. So we haven't really done a lot with the NIL, and it really hasn't impacted us as of yet. You know, it's still early in the game, I guess, so mm-hmm. That could potentially happen down the road.
Ken Hockamy is with us. He is the newly named athletic director for the Aztec athletic program at Pima Community College. Financially, are you in pretty good shape to move forward with what you would like to accomplish, Ken?
I think so. I think the Pima College has been super in supporting our student athletes. It's a great program. It really is. And it gives a lot of kids an opportunity to go to school. There's a lot of kids in various programs who probably would never have thought about attending college, but with an opportunity to play a sport, they are in class and working towards their degree. And it's a similar story to what happened to me. You know, when I was in high school, I didn't even plan on going to college, really. My parents didn't go to college. It wasn't really something that was important in my house, but it was an opportunity to continue to play baseball. So I took it. And what it did is it led me down a path to get my associate's degree and then my bachelor's and then my master's. And I'm so thankful for that opportunity to play a sport, because it ended up giving me so much more. And that's what Pima College can do for so many young people.
Well, you've certainly had a lot of success there with the baseball program. So I assume you'll be looking for a new baseball coach. It'd be pretty hard for you to. Or can you continue to do that, the baseball coach and athletic director?
I'm going to give it my best shot for another year. And you know, I think, you know, with the people that we have in our department and the coaches that I have, the assistant coaches that I have that understand our system that we've installed, I think I can do it. And I'm going to work as hard as I possibly can to be great in both areas. But, you know, there may come a day where it may be a little too much. So we'll figure that out down the road. But as of right now, I'm planning on being the baseball coach and the athletic director for at least another year.
All right, Ken, before we let you go, any final thoughts you would like to share with our listeners in the Tucson community about Pima Athletics?
I think the biggest message that I could give is we have a great thing going, and we really do. And I know a lot of people see the University of Arizona and they see that in the newspaper and on TV. We really have a great athletic department right down the road. We have a ton of kids who are doing great things. So, I'm looking forward to continuing the success that we already have here. And, you know, hopefully people will get a chance to get out and see some games and support our program.
All right, Ken Hockamy, congratulations, Ken. And people can find out more about all the great things going on at Pima Community College by visiting pima.edu. All the best, and good luck to you, Ken Hockamy.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me.
Mona's Danish Bakery is our favorite bakery in town. We're not alone. Tucson Lifestyle Magazine this month naming Mona's Danish Bakery, Tucson's favorite bakery. Mona's is home, of course, of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com, now serving alcoholic beverages to go along with your lunch and breakfast. Orange juice and champagne, mimosa would go great. Open now for breakfast and lunch, 6:30 Tuesday, 6:30 a.m., Tuesday through Sunday. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. Shelly Fishman is a financial advisor and business consultant in Tucson, Arizona. Contact Shelly via buckmastershow.com or directly via email at saf824@earthlink.net.
And we're going to contact Shelly Fishman in Verona, Italy. Good evening, Shelly. How are you, sir? How is your vacation going?
Oh, it's a horrible vacation. Bill, it's just so terrible. The scenery is ugly. There's nothing to see. I mean, it's just been a tremendous delight.
Yeah, I bet it has. I was going to say our sympathies, but it's more like wish we were there. So,
well, you know,
April was kind of a miserable market. Market-wise, it was kind of a very tough month. It looks like we're starting to recover. As those on Wall Street and those watching what's going on with the Fed are seeing that maybe this inflation thing is under control after all, Shelley Fishman.
Well, you know, Bill, it's kind of funny because the markets have been rooting for success and really betting that the Fed will roll back its interest rates this year so that the people who've really been hurt by the higher interest rates and the industries that have been hurt by the higher interest rates will also be able to share in this recovery. Where we are as of today, I mean, I looked at it a couple of minutes ago, but it looks like the market's flat today. It was okay yesterday. After the employment numbers came out last week, the market actually reacted very, very well. We're not at the highs for the year, but we're very close to the record highs that we set about a month and a half ago. So even though the volatility that we see on a daily level can be, you know, somewhat disconcerting. You know, if you were to do a reduction analysis on the thing and plot it on a graph, you'd see this is pretty much up and to the right.
Shelley, if you were running the Fed, what would you do with it?
Oh, gosh, we have this discussion every week. I would have several months ago, I would have begun to cut interest rates. Mm-hmm. I think that this inflation that we have had is not the kind of traditional inflation that we saw certainly in the late 20th century. This was caused in great part by the pandemic, to a very lesser extent by the stimulus that was poured into the economy. But really, it was the supply side, the supply channel problems that caused the inflation and got it kicked off. So it's not clear to me that the higher interest rates are doing very much to solve the problem. It seems to be resolving on its own. That said, we have a situation where major industries like the auto industry and the building and construction industries are being very much hampered by these high interest rates. And it's not clear that the interest rates themselves are doing the job of managing inflation. Inflation has been more or less flat now for several months. It ticked up a tenth of a percent last month. The wage gains have outpaced inflation now for almost 2 years. And the job market, which again ticked up a tiny bit last month, has been very, very stable and at, 20 or 30 year highs. So if I were Mr. Powell, and I'm not, I would begin to think about the damage the high interest rates may be doing. That said, I have to remind myself all the time that if I am Mr. Powell, I've got two words kind of, posted on my whiteboard, in the office. And then the first one is full employment. And the second one is low inflation.
Inflation, in your opinion, Shelley, what is it about a full point higher than the Fed would like? Is that kind of what you're seeing?
Yeah, and there are many measures of inflation, many ways to measure inflation. But if you use the Fed's way of measuring, then we're about a point higher than they'd like to see. They'd like to have inflation down to 2%, and as of this past month, we're at about 3%. And, those are not exact figures because they're always subject to some revision. But they've been pretty steady now for, for two quarters. So, it's not clear that 2% is the right number, but it is their number. And so if they don't see the economy kind of getting there, they have very justifiable reasons for keeping interest rates high. On the other hand,
you know, the Fed has to look at, even though it's not part of their charter, they have to look at the broader economy and what effect their actions or inactions might have. And again, if I'm sitting in Jay Powell's office, I'm thinking to myself, I've got several major industries which are very much affected by high interest rates that have been damaged by what I've done, even though I've done the right thing. And it's time to start, you know, getting that back under control.
Because in the employment growth is continuing, but at a somewhat slower pace than we've seen.
Well, you know, the employment growth for April was only 175,000. Give me a break. you know, so it's 15,000 less than was forecast. We've had, you know, I've lost track of the number, but it's some silly number like 12 or 13 million new jobs created since Biden's been in office. You know, the average that people look at is and say this is the right number is about 200,000 jobs per month, and we're way above that on average. You know, we'll see if this number gets adjusted up or down. The unemployment rate, again, is you know, in the area of about 4%, which is, again, at, you know, 60, 70-year lows. We haven't had anything like this. Maybe my math is wrong here. We haven't had anything like this since the 1950s and beginning in 1960s. That month after month after month, we have unemployment that is coming in as low as it has been. So, again, you know, the economy will do, and policy decisions can only affect it one way or the other to a certain extent. But what Powell has done now month after month is done nothing. And that I just find it as an advisor and, you know, as an amateur economist, you know, I just find that not in keeping with the best judgment that certainly I would make in his position.
When is the next opportunity for Mr. Powell to make a decision? And hopefully the decision will be to start cutting. When are they meeting again, Shelley Fishman?
The Open Market Committee meets, I think it's the 10th and 11th of June. It's in the second week of June. You know, he'll have another chance at that point. The odds right now, the odds makers are saying that there's going to still be two rate cuts this year, but they're really minimizing the chances that the first one of those rate cuts will be in June.
Hey, let's talk a little bit about your trip. You're a couple of weeks in, two or three, actually, I think about three weeks. Huh? 3 weeks?
Yeah, four maybe.
Four weeks. Time.
We're a month in.
Four, wow. Yeah. Time flies. Let's talk a little bit about the trip. Overall, some of your impressions.
Well, you know, we started off in Istanbul and then went up the Adriatic. And so we got to stop in some countries that are mostly agricultural and are not places that you generally read about when it comes to the, you know, the what we used to call the first world or the highly industrialized world. Now, the past couple of weeks we've been in Italy, which is, you know, certainly part of the economic community of Europe. And what has become clear is that tourism has become an increasing part of the bases for the economy in cities that are not Rome, Naples, and you know, Milan. It's hard to imagine even, and we're not quite in the tourist season yet, but the place is jammed. And you know, Venice was jammed. Venice was jammed so bad you couldn't move. Verona is, you know, the home of Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet and Two Gentlemen of Verona. It's not as impossible to get around, but it's clear just from walking around that all of the things you see, both in the tourist region, the old cities and in the surrounds are geared to tourists. And that is, you know, there's no accident. I mean, the Italians are doing what they see in their best self-interest. And, you know, the Italian economy has been doing pretty well over the past year or two. So I don't know. I'm not seeing the kind of uncertainty that, for instance, we saw last year in Germany, where they were just trying to figure it out. The Italians seem to have figured it out, at least for now. And the whole idea is get more and more people down here throughout the year, not just in high tourist season.
Well, the gelato is good year round.
Oh God! I don't know whether it's the rules of you know the Food and Drug Administration, whatever. I love gelato. I love it in Tucson and in the States, but you taste gelato here in Italy, and it's an entirely different experience. And as good as that was, I had something the night before last, I guess it was, which was a white chocolate with a pistachio swirl. And the first thing I could do was think to myself, this would cure world peace.
I think so.
If everybody had two scoops of this, there would be no more war.
Yeah, that's right. I agree with that one, Shelley. All right, Shell, we will see and talk to you soon, I hope. Thank you very much.
You bet. Have a great week.
Thanks a lot. Shelley Fishman on the Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. And Shelley checking in from lovely Verona, Italy. Coming up next, Jeff Lattice, retired JetBlue captain. A lot going on, some breaking news about Boeing right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. When we do our telephone interviews, the live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management, Green Things. Wow, perfect weather. Do some spring gardening. Go by Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Their beautiful 13-acre site has everything. I can't imagine what they do not have when it comes to any kind of plants for the Sonoran Desert gardening. Also, Zocalo Village, all the wonderful, not just the pottery, the Talavera pottery, but beautiful handcrafted dining room sets made out of mesquite and other woods. So they've got Zocalo Village right there on site, greenthingsaz.com, and zocalovillage.com. They're open daily in their 53rd year of business. Our contributor, and we're delighted to have about two dozen regular contributors to our program. Our contributor on aviation is retired Captain Jeff Lattice. Jeff retired after put in 20 years with JetBlue, where he flew nearly 20,000 hours of accident-free aviation, commanding the Airbus A320 and A321. Jeff's a highly decorated retired combat fighter pilot. Jeff also worked at the Pentagon as an Air Force Special Weapons Officer. He's now training pilots on business jets. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing very well, Bill. Thanks for having me again.
Always a pleasure. I'm going to begin today. We'll get to the news about the armaments going over to Ukraine. I want to get your take on that. But the news about Boeing today, the Federal Aviation Administration has opened a new investigation into Boeing after the plane maker informed the regulator that it may not have performed some required inspections on the new 787 planes coming off the production line. Jeff, this is just, oh man, one in, it's like pull off the Band-Aid, then you put the Band-Aid back on and pull it off and one thing after another. How big a deal do you think this one is?
You know, it's hard to say until they actually release what.
It's a whistleblower.
I don't know what they actually cut the corners on, because that's mm-hmm. essentially the way I read it. They were mm-hmm. trying to cut corners just to either save time or money. And this whistleblower basically said, you know, one thing the FAA absolutely despises, and that's cutting corners. Mm-hmm. And they know that cutting corners could also cost lives. Mm-hmm. So they're very specific on their regulation, and it's black and white. So if they didn't cover that, now the deal with Boeing, it's unique in that the FAA gave Boeing certain authority to do self-inspection.
See, that's a big problem, I think. Why in the world with this large plane maker, why not just put some FAA inspectors in the plant?
Well, they do that, believe it or not. Usually at plants there are FAA guys that are working inside the factory, obviously not for that factory, but they're working for the FAA. But they're supposed to be monitoring those types of things, especially the paperwork, you know, as it's being inspected or what things are being done. They're inspectors during the manufacturing process. Thing about just about any technology, everything gets so advanced, and it advances at such a accelerated pace now, the FAA couldn't keep up with those changes, and the experts resided in the company. So it at the time, it kind of made sense. It's like, hey, we don't know how this stuff works. You do. You self-regulate. Mm-hmm. And basically, they agree that they're going to be honest people, and if it costs the company money or time, then that's what it's going to be. But obviously, they're not employees of the FAA,
right?
And they have to listen to you know, their employers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the employers know that logic, and they're not supposed to interfere with it, but you know that there's pressure put on all the people to keep costs down.
Yeah.
It's normal business. And this is where the problems really lie. It all comes down to cost cutting.
Well, this comes on top of the Alaska Airlines situation with the door, and the investigations have shown that that maybe that was not an isolated incident with the 737 MAX.
Yeah, well, it's not an isolated incident in general. Boeing has had many
problems.
I mean,
it's an isolated incident that it happened, isolated that it was happened airborne, but I mean, it may not be isolated in the factory itself.
Correct. We know that's a fact.
Yeah.
That's not. And that's the reason why the FAA is picking on Boeing right now. That's what happens if it's an airline situation and an airline starts having maintenance problems, for instance,
mm-hmm.
That they're cutting corners or whatever, and the FAA gets on them and they start finding them. If it's a chronic problem, they're going to be visiting that company more often than other companies. That's what's going on with Boeing in the manufacturing side. They're showing a lot of problems in their manufacturing, and the microscopes start coming out. And they get examined deeper than they ever have before, and they start finding these problems. People feel somewhat encouraged now to speak out of things that they see wrong, and they're going to feel more empowered to say something to the authorities about that, and that's kind of what's going on now. Boeing has had problems for a long time, at least for the last 15 years, after McDonnell Douglas and Boeing merged together, mm-hmm. and McDonnell Douglas leadership took over Boeing.
Mm-hmm.
Up until that point, Boeing was an engineering company. It was basically run by engineers.
Right.
And MACD was a Wall Street company. They were about making money.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up, those are the people who took over the company, and they decided to make money versus engineering products that were high quality.
Yeah,
and the quality has gone down.
And then you get a carrier like Southwest, which is dependent on the Boeing products. So when Boeing's delays, that's costing schedules be cut dramatically, just as we get ready to go into the summer season, at least for Southwest. They've had some big cutbacks.
Yeah. Well, during the whole MAX, the 737 MAX fiasco, mm-hmm. 3 years ago, mm-hmm. or whenever that was, mm-hmm. now, Southwest pretty much threatened Boeing, saying, we're not going to buy your products. The pressure was put on. I know the vice president of Airbus USA, she used to live here in Tucson. But what has happened, Southwest has opened the door to other airline manufacturers. Now, they're actually looking or have looked at the Airbus 220. Which is a 120-passenger airplane, so it meets their design specifications, mm-hmm, the size mm-hmm. of plane they like mm-hmm. to fly. So they're looking, or at one time, we're looking seriously at Airbuses after the whole MAX thing. I think they've changed. They decided, okay, Boeing's going to give us a good deal on 737s. We'll just continue with that for now.
United, the union at United has sent out a memo that United is currently under public and government scrutiny. In fact, the union is saying to the members, remain vigilant amid a spike in safety problems over at United.
Yeah, these were stemming from, if you'll remember, about a month or two ago,
mm-hmm.
a wheel came off of a 777.
I remember that.
And basically ended up in a parking lot and demolished a car in a parking lot.
Oh, my goodness.
That was one of the issues that they used, saying, hey, this has happened. There's been several other maintenance problems that have been going on. Here again, it's one of those things when a company starts seeing a spike in certain safety issues, whether it's a maintenance problem or, you know, they're having, and they can't really pin it down on a single system.
Mm-hmm.
Like in this case, they had a wheel fall off here. They had an airplane return because of hydraulic problems. So they're different problems that are happening. So it's not necessarily a specific system in the plane that's having a problem.
Tools were left in the plain wheel wells that apparently caused that wheel to come off.
Is that what caused it to come off? I tell you the truth, I didn't look into what.
That's what the.
I wonder how that happened.
I don't know.
Now, we were talking about Boeing's problems
probably
5 to 10 years ago. The Air Force was starting to receive their new tanker from Boeing, which is a 767 tanker. The thing had problems from the beginning of its design, and it was delayed and delayed and delayed. They finally started getting delivery of them. When the Air Force gets an airplane, they basically kind of tear it apart right away and put it back together again. Well, they took it apart, and they found old lunch bags, tools, trash, all stuffed in. So they, after a while, after a few
kinda
of these deliveries,
about that,
the Air Force said, we're sending you all of our tankers back, and you're going to clean them up. That cost them a little bit of cash.
Yeah, yeah.
So leaving tools in airplanes, when usually the way the maintenance side works, I'm not a maintainer, but I've seen kind of how they do it. They'll have their tool bins, and they'll have, like, outlines or something. So at the end of the day, they look, and if there's a missing tool, they have to find it. And it could be buried in an airplane.
Yeah.
Or, for instance, in the when I was flying fighters, it was very common, like a pin would fall out and in the cockpit.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have that just laying around. You can't. It's called foreign object damage. So if you have FOD, F-O-D, in the cockpit, it's got to be found. It doesn't matter if it's a pin or a rock, a penny.
Yeah.
Something falls out of your pocket, you got to find that because it could get behind one of your flight controls, like your stick or your thrust levers, and jam them.
Yeah, and that's a big
problem. So, you know, having junk in your airplane is not a good thing. If it's sitting out in the wing and you got a hammer out there by a hydraulic actuator, next thing you know, you have jammed flight controls out there.
Yeah, one thing could lead to another very easily, as you know. Retired JetBlue Captain Jeff Lattice is with us. We're going to take a break right here, talk with Jeff right after the break.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show Tuesday edition. This portion of the program presented by our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. We send so many of our listeners over to that beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment, and it's a great getaway. It's only about a three-hour drive to an area that has about the same elevation as Denver. I think downtown Silver City is about 5,500 feet, but then you drive up a little ways toward the Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument. It's about 7,000 feet. That's a real pretty drive. Take about 40 minutes to get up there, but great getaway. SouthwestNewMexico.org is the starting place for your approximately three-hour drive east of Tucson. Lots to do, a lot of outdoor activities, some great places to stay and eat. Some of those New Mexican restaurants have been in Silver City forever. They've got some great outlets over there in historic Silver City. Jeff Lattice is with us from retired captain at JetBlue, and Jeff is currently training pilots on business jets. Jeff worked at the Pentagon as an Air Force Special Weapons Officer, and I'm curious about his take on the United States finally agreeing now to kind of up the ante, Jeff, and send some weapons over to Ukraine, where they, to say the least, desperately needed as we're entering the third year of the war over there. Going to make a difference, maybe?
I'll tell you what, it would have made a huge difference if they were allowed to have those weapons earlier.
Yeah.
And I find it kind of insulting what Congress has done about these weapons deals.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter whether it's Israel, whether it's Ukraine or Taiwan. What Congress has done is an embarrassment of this country. Those munition deals should have gone through months ago. What has happened now, you've lost so much property in Ukraine to the Russians because of this. The Ukrainians are basically, they're not retreating, but they're moving their lines back and digging in pretty much like World War One.
It's a what they call a strategic holding pattern.
Exactly. So they're holding. That's kind of what they've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
Now that these weapons have come in, or they're starting to come in, and I'm not too sure. I would assume that artillery.
I'm sure it's classified a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure it is too. But I'm sure a lot of it's going to be artillery because they're outgunned right now probably 10 or 20 to 1 on artillery shells. And the way the Russians are fighting this new game, they're actually using kind of unsophisticated drones to locate where the Ukrainians are now, kind of like what the Ukrainians were doing to them, and then basically targeting them. So the Ukrainians don't have a whole lot of time to set up their positions. So they'll move, set up a position, shoot. So it's a shoot and scoot kind of mentality that they're doing. But because of just the numbers, they're just basically getting overwhelmed. If those weapons would have been in place when they should have been, none of this would have happened. And so, like I say, I'm a little angry about what's happened politically in this country that should never have happened.
Yeah, well, the weapons deal was held
political.
Hostage.
Completely political, and that should never have happened.
Yeah.
Now, they're getting the weapons. They should be getting their F-16 sometime soon, I would think, even though it's only going to be a handful initially.
Can an F-16 compete with the Russian product?
Oh, yeah. No problem. As a matter of fact, they're far more advanced than anything the Russians really have when it comes to fighting.
Okay.
And a lot of that has to do with maneuverability and dependability. They're not getting necessarily the most advanced air-to-air missiles that we have, but the goal of the F-16 isn't going to necessarily be air superiority type stuff. It's air to ground is what they're going to primarily use them for. As far as right now the Russians have air superiority, i.e. that means they can fly their fighters in. That doesn't mean they can fly in scot-free. They can still be targeted by the Ukrainians, but there is no active air defense, air-to-air type defense to take on the Russians. So part of this package deal is going to be basically air defense. Stingers, Patriots, those type of weapons should also be flowing in. Once they can get control of that airspace and keep the Russian air forces away from the front lines, then they can actually start moving forward. Air superiority is extremely important when you're talking about a frontal kind of line.
Yes.
Because if you don't have air superiority, you can't get your airplanes into the front lines, right? So once you get that, now you can attack your ground forces with almost impunity with your air force. That's where they need to get. Once they get that, they're going to roll the Russians back. The weapons that we're going to provide them, the U.S. Western-style munitions, are far superior to what the Ukrainians have been using in this past couple of years.
Well, the Russians play the long game. I mean, they used it in World War II. They use, you know, the frontal assault for the Russians. They don't really care how many people they send over the top in kind of using a World War I terminology, over the top, and then pushing the Ukrainians back. I think the front line's now 15 or 20 miles they've gained. But look at the cost of lives in this thing.
It's happening on both sides now.
Yeah, it's a meat grinder.
Yeah.
It is. It's horrible.
So that can stop.
Yeah.
And people don't, it's kind of counterintuitive, but with better weapons, you can actually decrease the killing. You know, because they are designed to kill people, but some of the weapons are designed to blow up bridges and things like that, the infrastructure, and that's what stops them from moving.
Getting back to summer here and the aviation season, vacation season. It's going to be interesting with Southwest doing some cutbacks. This could be a very, let's put it this way, folks. If you're going to be flying, bring your patience.
I think that's going to be true anytime.
You know,
I flew, about 3 weeks ago. I hadn't flown in almost a year. And I went back to the Midwest. And you would think it was.
You were not in the cockpit. You were
in the back. You know,
yeah, in the back. Okay.
And it's midweek, and the plane was full, packed.
Wow.
And this is supposed to be the slow season.
Yeah.
This was before, you know, this was before spring break. Or actually, it was in between spring break and graduation. Mm-hmm. That's usually a slow time in the springtime to fly. But every flight, I was on four different flights total over that week, and every one of them were not a seat available. So. Yeah, bring your patience. Planes are going to get late. They get late during the day. If you want to travel and you want to ensure you're going to get there on time, travel in the morning.
First flight of the day, by and large, goes out on time, doesn't it?
As a matter of fact, the companies will push for on-time takeoffs in the morning. They'd go an extra step to get those airplanes out on time because a five-minute delay for your first flight will be a 10-minute delay for the second flight.
And then people start
15, 20, and then by the end of the day, you're an hour and a half late.
Exactly.
So, get there early. It's better to be impatient waiting to get on an airplane than finding out the airplane left you behind.
Yeah, you know? We haven't heard as many of these airline incidents, complaints about crazy behavior on board.
I think it's decreased.
Still there.
I haven't been in an airline or flying, I don't get that much experience. I don't hear it from my buddies, because they talk to me all the time.
There's a lot of unruly people.
I think the problem right now that the airlines are seeing, and it might be some of the reason why you see some of the cutbacks this summer, they can't train enough pilots.
Yes, that's...
And because when you need to upgrade a captain, that's two positions of training you have to do. So.
All right. Always a pleasure, Jeff Lattis. Thank you very much. We'll let you get back to work. Thank you very much. All right. That'll do it on behalf of Captain Lattis and John on the other side of the glass, making sure all the buttons are in the right position. Bill saying, have a great afternoon, everybody.